Welcome everyone to the MMA show. This is going to be a two-part series because the story is involving a four-year-old little girl. And we need everyone to like, share, and subscribe to this channel, but share the show out far and wide because we need to support Autumn Shaw because she is being a victim of medical kidnapping. They're trying to remove her from her parents' custody. She went into the hospital for E. coli, and they've treated her with everything but E. coli, putting her on a vent, et cetera, et cetera. And it's traumatic. This poor little girl's gone through a lot. Kidney failure, possible seizure, I don't know, and intubation. So this poor little four-year-old girl's gone through a lot, and so is her family, and then they want to threaten to take her away from the custody of her parents. So I would like everyone to get your phone out and give a call to 650-736-4089. 650-736-4089. We're just letting them know we're not going to be belligerent. We just want to let them know they cannot take their rights away from the parents. Okay? The parents ultimately love Autumn more than the doctors, more than the nurses. So that's on today's episode. Very important show. Like, share, and subscribe. If you believe in what I'm doing, please consider becoming an angel investor. The easiest way to do that is going to theambermayshow.com, hit the donate button, and donate whatever you feel you can donate. Or you can be a $5 monthly subscriber by going to theambermayshow.locals.com. You can do that. I just want to let you know, Cup of Health is always there to help promote healthy weight loss. And it helps with all kinds of things as turmeric. It's an antioxidant. And you know what? It's not going to have a lot of pesticides. Did you know your coffee that you drink every day is filled with pesticides because they spray those fields? And so if you want good, healthy, delicious coffee, go to cupofhealth.com. And when you're there, use promo code AMBER and you can save some money. So cupofhealth.com for healthy coffee that's going to help you lose weight, help with joints, and helps with antioxidants. cupofhealth.com, promo code AMBER. Well, coming up right now is the story of Autumn Shaw. I told you I have Autumn's mother joining us today, so I want to welcome Hope to the program. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really grateful to be able to share Autumn's story and get the support that we're looking for. I had also mentioned to the doctors a few days before, my daughter doesn't really drink milk, and she was begging for milk. So I was grateful that, because I kept saying, is that an indicator of something, right? To me, that's communicating something. If you don't normally want something and like you're begging for it, like every 2 minutes. And it was at a time when she wasn't allowed to have fluids. The fact that she wasn't, like, she normally would beg for water. The fact that she was begging for milk was like standing out to me a lot. So When I spoke with a nurse through Remnant, she talked about if we were going to go the route of Cayoxylate, you need to check calcium levels, because if they're low, there's a danger to the heart, right? Because Cayoxylate also lowers your calcium levels. So I spoke with the doctor about it, and it was a resident at night, I believe, and they were very dismissive at first. And so I really had to push the fact that, like, she's been asking me for milk. Can you look at the calcium levels? And they were like, well, you know, we could probably wait until morning. And I was like, well, if we're going to get Cayoxylate tonight, and wait until morning was more like to talk to the team when they do rounds at 9, not necessarily to give her calcium then. But I was kind of insistent, and they told me they didn't think she would need it. So I was sitting in the room kind of deciding to myself when they came back to me and said that actually her calcium levels were really low and that could be a risk to her heart. And I was just like, I was just saying all of this to you. So they decided to supplement her with some calcium, and she did do the Cayoxylate, which was able to bring down her potassium levels. And, you know, speaking with a doctor through a patient advocacy group, he did say getting to the level that she was at with how much fluid she had accumulated, it probably was appropriate to try thiazide, the hydrochlorothiazide. And so we did do the hydrochlorothiazide. Now, right before we gave it, I got nervous because she had her highest urine output, right? And any diuretic has the potential, even if it's less harsh, because it's slower acting, to impact the kidneys and cause potential kidney injury. But we did give it, and she had some rounds of it, and she her urine output was continuing to go up, which was good. And so we were actually pleased with that. She was on a good trajectory. The patient advocacy group had also asked me to ask about metabolic acidosis, given the state of her kidneys. And I was glad I did, because she was starting to develop issues to need some treatment. And so it's really odd to me that the doctors were like, we know you don't like medication. The treatment is sodium bicarbonate. So why don't we get her set up for the tunneled line? And I was like,
well, that's normal operating procedure, sodium bicarbonate and dialysis, because your machine gets hooked up to potassium and sodium bicarbonate. And there's a bag of saline just in case, like I told you, your heart.
Right. Well, we're not even doing dialysis at this point, and they're thinking that I'm gonna not want a medication, even though it's baking soda. I was like,
yeah, that's what it is, baking soda.
I was like, I'm not going to do a tunneled line, a surgery for a tunneled line, when you're telling me that we could at least try baking soda first.
Yeah.
Right. So we did the sodium bicarbonate, and she just continued to improve. She was doing pretty well with her urine output. And then it was probably like a Sunday where her urine output started to become pretty intense. And by Monday, she was losing a liter of fluid every 3 to 4 hours, which is extreme. And so that's the day that the doctor said, well, we want to challenge her kidneys, and so we're going to have you push a liter and a half of fluids for her by mouth. And I was like, so she's losing rapid amounts of water, and then you're also wanting her to consume, which I spoke to a nurse who said that would maybe even be the equivalent of 5 liters of water for her to drink. So I was like, we're going to do mass inputs, and then she's having mass output. And she started to lose almost all the weight in water that she had gained within like a 36-hour period. And so I was getting kind of concerned, but I was trying to, you know, follow their direction in terms of like, okay, she's having a lot of output, maybe we do a lot of input. And so by that night, she started throwing up the water and still having a liter of fluid output every 3 to 4 hours.
Wow.
So, and then she was telling me that her head hurt. But she was also saying, even though she would throw up the water, she was so thirsty. She's so thirsty. So I told the nurses and the resident that I was concerned that it was just too much loss, like too much weight loss too fast. And then her body was not able to kind of convert maybe what she was consuming to what she was losing. Mm-hmm. And they told me to just feed her ice chips and she would be fine until rounds in the morning. And so she, you know, would always wake me when she needed to pee, or I would prompt her, do you need to go, when it was nighttime. And so I fed her ice chips all night until about 4 a.m. And then I thought she fell asleep. And instead, around 5, she wet the bed, which was odd. And so I asked her a question, and what she said didn't really make sense. And so I got up to walk around to where her head was turned, and her eyes were focused up and to the left. Now I was up and to the left to talk to her, but her eyes were shifting back and forth. And so I went to get the nurses because it appeared she was having a seizure. And so they gave her Ativan, and they took her for a CT scan, and her blood pressure was high. Now, a few days prior, when we were doing the hydrochlorothiazide, they were pushing a different blood pressure medication at the same time, but hydrochlorothiazide lowers blood pressure, and her blood pressures would lower when she would take it. And so we had declined additional blood pressure medication because they couldn't really answer me when I was asking about, well, what if it gets too low, right? We've had so many errors on their part that I was concerned that were already lowering the blood pressure with the thiazide. So after her seizure, she did have high blood pressure, and they said that when they did the CT scan, there was a little bit of a blurry part of the back of her brain. The neurologist didn't really seem concerned because she had had Ativan, she hadn't slept all night, and she was keeping her eyes closed in the bright light, but she was able to push and pull with her hands like they requested. And one of the doctors came into the ICU and said, we're concerned about a stroke. You should, or we want to intubate her, to put her on anesthesia and to get an MRI. And at that time, I spoke with a patient advocate, and they were like, I don't know that I would do that right now. Kind of along with the neurologist, like maybe wait and see, because they just want to evaluate her eyes. But the kind of overall feeling was very threatening in the ICU. So we did wind up consenting for her to be under anesthesia for an MRI. When she came out of the MRI, we were told that she may have a condition called PRESS, which is just due to the kind of constriction and expansion of the blood vessels in the back of the brain. Now, I had a friend who actually had PRESS after she gave birth, and she went to faint fine, and the neurologist seemed to describe it as something that's, an issue for some people, but most of the time it resolves on its own. So they would continue to want to evaluate her, but they weren't extubating her, which we thought was very odd. Why isn't she being extubated? And so they had her on a ventilator, which we didn't consent to. The intubation that we consented to was strictly for her to go under anesthesia for an MRI. And so they're telling us, we're gonna get to it later this afternoon. And so they come to talk to us, and they tell us, now remember, she was throwing up fluids. So my concern was kind of around, if there's any fluid in her lungs, it might be from her throwing up fluids, which is like a type of pneumonia, an aspiration pneumonia.
Exactly.
And so when they came to us and said that they would not be extubating her, they were going to give her time on the ventilator because the compression from the ventilator would move fluid out of the lungs. And I was like, that's Mm-mm. not the way I wound up speaking through Mm-mm. patient advocacy to a respiratory therapist who said, no, like, as I thought, it's more of a stopgap. It's Mm-mm. not a treatment. It is not a Mm-mm. treatment. So I was concerned after, we're getting into the evening time. Now they're hooking up an EEG to her head to evaluate about the PRESS. And I haven't seen the needle move on the ventilator at all for what they claim they're looking for. So I went to the doctor and I said, I'm not seeing the needle move on this. So what are next steps? And she was very dismissive. She said, eventually that would be a conversation of diuretics. So again
with the diuretics,
the Lasix. So
she had E. coli. Have they even touched the E. coli issue?
That when we first got there, they said you just have to let it run its course. So it's really fascinating to me that you let run its course, but
the previous ER said no, you need a certain kind of procedure, we can't do it, so go to this hospital.
They don't do pediatric E. coli.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. Hey guys, I want to give you a pro tip to help keep your family healthy when everyone around you is coughing, sniffling, or sneezing, okay? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go first to drstellamd.com. When you're there, go ahead and grab some COVID bites. Also, get your ivermectin, set up your telemed appointment, and get your ivermectin. I'm going to give you a promo code to help you save some money, and use promo code AmberMay, one word, and that will help you save money. Now, here's your pro tip for you. You can use this on your entire family. The adult doses too. I've talked to a medical expert. They said cut it in half when you're dealing with children, so one tablet. What I do with my kids, because it's just too big of a pill for them, I get a blender, I put a pill in there, I fill it with water and like some flavoring, and then boom, I have them drink it before school. Pro tip, and what it has, and it's amazing. It has quercetin, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, all the therapeutics to help keep your body healthy and working at optimum health. Support your body's immune system when you use the Kobe Bites. They're amazing. So go to drstellamd.com, grab your Kobe Bites, get your ivermectin, use promo code Amber May, and save some money.
Hi, I'm Dr. Artis, and you're watching me live on the Amber May Show. Stay tuned.
In the early 1900s, like in 1920s, 30s, with $20, you used to be able to buy an entire men's suit. You could get the handkerchief, the tie, the vest, the jacket, the pants, the belt, everything. And you could also buy that with a piece of gold. Now, in today's standards, you can't buy much with $20. Maybe a tie, maybe that's it. You could not even come close to an entire men's suit with a $20 bill. However, if you still had a piece of gold, you could still buy an entire men's suit with that piece of gold. See, silver and gold have intrinsic value, and it's had intrinsic value since the beginning of time. It's always been a currency around since the existence of man, gold and silver. So why not protect your investments and protect your earning power by owning some gold and silver? And the easiest way to do that is contacting Jim Tewell at EPSWealthManagement.com. That's Edward Paul Sam, wealthmanagement.com, EPSWealthManagement.com. Give him a call and let him know you'd like them to have some tangible assets in your portfolio. You'd like to have some gold and silver, and he can help you do that. So if you're ready to protect yourself and protect your investments, then go ahead and give Jim Tewell a call, whom you've seen on our program at EPSWealthManagement.com. Let him know Amber May sent you.
You are listening to the Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
Okay, so you're getting conflicting doctors right there. Right. There is a procedure you need to do. However, they don't do it at this hospital. You need to go to this hospital. That hospital, you go in for E. coli. They don't treat E. coli. They say, let it run its course. Then why didn't they send you home?
Right.
Why didn't they send you home?
They claim it was because of the creatinine numbers starting to go up. But when I look back now at like other levels of creatinine where they were like, oh, we'll just kind of wait and see. I'm really confused because they didn't seem that high at the time. Right. And
instead, no, you go to E. coli. They do everything but E. coli. They make her kidneys function stop. Now her kidney functions are kind of working, but to the extreme.
Right.
And now her head's hurting. Now they intubate her. They intubate her.
Right. And so then they want to do like diuretics again, but I'm trying to have that conversation in the moment, and the doctor is very much shutting me down when it comes to diuretics. So she says, that will be an evolving conversation. We are good for the night. I am like, right now she is good for the night, like talking about the compression on the lungs from the ventilator. And I'm like upset about this, but
of course.
I can tell it's a very hostile environment right now. So I say that I want to be notified of any new medications that she is given. So, and I let the nurse know, I let the doctors know. Now there's a switchover, and I let that nurse, the night nurse, know. He wakes me to do, because she has to have diaper changes while she's on the ventilator, wakes me to do a diaper change and gives her, because with the intubation, she's, again, I shared with you that I have a very high tolerance to anesthesia, so she's not really truly sedated. Mm-hmm. She's very upset and trying to pull out the tubes, which mm-hmm. is so hard as a parent mm-hmm. to see. She's 4, and she just turned 4, like a little mm-hmm. over a month ago. So it's really, to me, in my mind, like a 3-year-old, you know?
I know. My mom heart is with you on this, man. Yeah. My mom heart is like crying with you. I'm
and
like,
it's amazing how many people who work here don't have children. Like, pretty
seriously.
Like, yeah. My husband's like, it's really odd that so many people would work in a children's hospital and none of them have children. So I really feel like they don't understand. You know? Yeah. And they become numb, you know?
Yes.
Like, yeah. And so, in the middle of the night, I get woken for a diaper change. We do a dose of Ativan, diaper change, a dose of fentanyl, because she's just not out. And when you're messing with
fentanyl, fentanyl?
Yeah, I know. So, and they try to rotate them because the risk of addiction to benzodiazepines, but
whoa.
Then the alternative is fentanyl. So then I wake up they also woke me for Tylenol, which I declined because she had just had fentanyl. And I was like, what's the Tylenol for? She didn't have a fever. So it would have been for pain, which I was like, well, you just give her fentanyl. So I imagine that's much heavier duty than the Tylenol. So then I woke up around three or four, and for a diaper change, and I said, wow, her heart rate is really high. And he said, the nurse, I just had to increase her blood pressure medication. I said, well, what changed? And he said, well, about an hour ago, we gave her the Lasix.
Again, with the Lasix, like, I'm mad for you. I'm not even her mother. I'm mad for you.
And remember, I had worked with nephrology for the hydrochlorothiazide to avoid Lasix for, 10 days at that point?
Yes.
So, they administered a medication without my consent, which I don't believe is legal. They didn't even wake me, right? Because that was supposed to be the evolving conversation. Why wasn't I woken and saying, hey, you know, we're going to try and shift directions here. We want to kind of move fluid a little bit faster. Now we're going to explore diuretics. Like, why wasn't I consulted about that? But then why would you also administer a medication Mm-mm. without my consent? And especially if they look through her chart, they can see that she has not been on Lasix, right? Like, so if they were to consult with the nephrology team or just look through her medical record, they would see that we had been using hydrochlorothiazide. So for them to skip straight to that option was also very upsetting to me. So all of these factors, I'm very upset. And, I say to the nurse, I want to speak to the doctor. I said, to the nurse, why wouldn't you wake me? And he did acknowledge, I apologize. You did request that I wake you before any new medications are given to her. And the night doctor comes and says, I explained, I was told this would be an evolving conversation, that she was good for the night. Why was she given Lasix? You can look in her records and see that we have been avoiding Lasix. She just says, well, I was told by the doctor that, if things hadn't changed, then we would move on to diuresis. But I was like, but still, you have no conversation with the parent. That's just unethical. That's not that good to me. From that incident, I let people know that, I'm going to be filing grievances at this point. This is for
sure. Yeah.
It was interesting because even with the conversation the night before with the doctor around, she's good for the night. It'll be an evolving conversation. She acknowledged, she was like, I know at this point there's been an erosion of trust, right? Because I was the one feeding her ice chips saying her head hurts. Like she's having this mass output. I even said to them, that day they had lowered her sodium bicarbonate to twice a day instead of four times a day. And I was wondering about an IV, does her body think she's dehydrated? And that's when they kept pushing the ice chips and then she has a seizure. So at this point, like people seem to not be listening.
No, they're not listening to you.
Right.
This is what I've been finding out, especially COVID really made it well known. They're not listening to us. They're not listening at all to us. You're absolutely right. And then bad medical decisions happen because they're not listening to our concerns and what we, it's our right to what we want to put in our body or not put in our body. That is our right. We are allowed to disagree with the doctor. And you know what? They have the right for us to sign a medical waiver saying, hey, we gave you the medical advice. You're not listening to it. I absolve my, you can no longer sue me. And that's our responsibility at that point.
Right.
And that you are right. This is our right. And they are violating our patient rights. You are 100% right.
Right. Exactly. And they don't know your child. So when I'm saying things like she doesn't ask for milk, can you maybe talk with me about what that could possibly indicate, correct, right?
Plus you're having constantly the shift, right? Right. One medical team. Now you have another medical team. You're the only one that's been consistent.
Yes.
Day and night. Day and night.
Every night, every day, and every evening is a different nurse. And then the shifts with the doctors, they're all changing.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I'm saying that I'm going to file grievances, which may come back to haunt me in this story, so in Autumn's story, because they know that I'm getting upset and that they have probably conducted malpractice and a lot of unethical things. So that day, they get really pushy about how So they do the hydrochlorothiazide, and by later in the afternoon, she is having more output of her urine, which they say will now be removing fluid from the lungs. But that evening, they start to talk about how they want to move on beyond the hydrochlorothiazide. They want to push something that's going to be harder. And they're telling me that the diuretic that I'm comfortable with is just not effective enough. But it's a little bit confusing because at one point a resident came in and she told us, like, we think she can get off the ventilator. She's, ready to maybe just do a high flow of oxygen at the nose.
High flow. There you go.
Right. Yeah. So at that point, I'm consulting a respiratory therapist through a patient advocacy network. Mm-hmm. He was like, she's on a, not everyone knows about like PIP and PEEP and all these things with the ventilator, but he explained to me that like she was on, at that time, she was on a PEEP of 6, and us without a ventilator is a PEEP of 5. So.
That right. Means they're putting way more oxygen, which is very common on the ventilator, than your lungs can take.
No. So actually it means that she doesn't need that much at all. So.
Right.
Right. So
well, we're saying the same thing, just in a different kind of way. My
right. Yes. Right. Right. So basically, she's being supported when she doesn't need the support, I guess.
Yeah.
The same thing. Yeah. So like the fact that she, like, what is ventilation doing at this point?
Nothing.
Right. So and so her oxygen requirement at the time. Remember, she's highly sedated because we have a high tolerance. So she's so highly sedated, mm-hmm. with constant PRNs of fentanyl, Ativan.
That fentanyl. Yeah.
And then she's on propofol, and
which is the blood pressure medication.
Propofol is actually also sedating, though. So
okay, because I had it for blood pressure.
Right. So yeah. So I mean, all these things are trying to make her calm enough to have the tube in, and mm-hmm. so that's affecting her oxygen requirements. So they say, like, this respiratory therapist I consulted was like, yeah, she was on like 80% oxygen or 60%, I would have some concerns, but she's only on 40%, and they're telling you they want her like at 21%, which is us without a ventilator. So how does that make sense? How is she so sedated and going to get to that place? She's not, like, her needs are going to be, like, you have her in like a delirium state, mm-hmm. and that's going to require some support until you take it out. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of conflicting between the resident and the attending and the fellow, because, and then also between the clinical support we're getting through the patient advocacy networks. So the doctors are telling me that she needs to meet these, like, very, very strict parameters to get her off the ventilator that don't exactly make sense to me. And especially because if we do decide to start her on another diuretic, I'm concerned that we're going to see her kidney function go down, and yep. they're demanding more output. And I'm just yep. not sure that that's possible. So the conversation that night doesn't go great. They start talking about wanting to do a PICC line as well. And I said, well, she has so many things in her, right? They also put in a urinary catheter again.
Oh, they did. Oh.
Because I can't prompt her to pee. She's out, or she's
yeah,
out of it.
Right. She had to. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So they talk about a PICC line, and I have concerns with all these things in her body. I think that they're like, when we first got to the ICU and they wanted to do an ART line when her blood pressure was high to monitor her blood pressure, we had hesitations, but they were very strict about their standard of care requiring that. And so we did it, and her hand swelled up. And so I'm like, is her body going to start focusing on all these other things, like a PICC line, which for her goes up through your leg and up through into the chest. Right. And so we're concerned that her body's going to start to focus on all these other things instead of supporting her kidneys, especially as they're demanding more fluid output. And so I said, I'm going to talk to my husband about it. Like, not right now. She just had 3 new IVs put in that day. Like, why would we also put in like a PICC line? They said, well, we're letting you know now, and it might be the middle of the night, and you only have a few minutes to decide. And I said, well, that's fine. I'm her mom. That's my job. So, I'll go back and I'll talk with my husband about it. But at this moment in time, she got all those new IVs. Like, you can use those, it sounds like. So the next morning, when we've been getting all this conflicting advice between the residents and the fellows, and what's expected of her, meeting these parameters that don't make sense for someone who's being so heavily sedated, the neurologist had come to speak to me and said that they wanted to put her on an anti-seizure medication, but it has the potential of damaging the kidneys.
So their standard of care is making her worse.
Yeah. So I speak with a consultant about, a patient advocate about the specific medication they wanted to give her, and explored an alternative maybe that could potentially impact the kidneys less. But I'm not positive about it, right? So I ask the team, where are the doctors? Why haven't they come to speak with us yet? Because I'd like to explore Lamictal, maybe. Just wanting to find out more about it. And instead, CPS shows up. And when CPS arrives, they say that we are not complying with the doctor's wishes in regards to two things. So they have a breakdown of what their concerns are about the two things that the doctors contacted them about. And they expressed that it was about the PICC line, which I had not said I was declining, except at the time I said that's a continuing conversation where if you come to see me and say it's necessary, then we'll talk about it then. And then also about the anti-seizure medication, which I've been asking for the doctors all morning, and which I haven't declined the one that they're wanting to use, but I'm asking if we can use an alternative. And so I'm pretty upset about this. And, I didn't explain the specific alternative, the Lamictal, that I was hoping to explore with the nurse, but she does have record of me trying multiple times to get a hold of the doctors. So when the doctors come in with CPS to finally have a bigger conversation, the doctor said that the reason she hadn't come to see me was because she was finding out about the Lamictal from the neurologist. And I said, that's not possible. You just heard about that from CPS because I didn't explain which drug it was to the nurse that I wanted to talk about with you. And so obviously there is some misinformation that is happening. Or what I would say is lying.
No, that's true. There's a lot of lying that happens when they start bringing medical kidnapping and they take the kids away from the parents.
Right.
That's most of the time.
Right.
And this we'll study, get, that's most of the time.
And we'll get to that when we get to the hearing. There are things that they have said that are just really, really horrible. So they say, well, that's not it. It's everything that's taking place. It's everything. And so I have patient advocates on the phone during that meeting to kind of discuss our concerns too, because where did this fluid come from? They're not really addressing potential aspiration from the throwing up of the fluid from the water as being what was acquired on her chest, right? And so is that being treated? If she has pneumonia, is that being treated? Especially because she's on a ventilator, that's got a risk of pneumonia as well. And the doctors are refusing to test her to see if she has an infection. And they claim that it's because, and I get it, I've never even given my daughter Tylenol. They claim that they don't want to just throw antibiotics at every kid. And I was like, okay, well, this would be you. And they're saying, oh, well, the cultures aren't always accurate. It's very confusing why you wouldn't just test for an infection. And then also I said in that meeting, they said, well, this is also about the diuretic. The one you're wanting is not effective enough to move the fluid out of her. And remember, this all started with them telling me that the compression from the ventilator was going to be just what she needed. And so I said, well, I'm not comfortable with Lasix. I have seen a poor response in my child very rapidly with her kidney function. And so if we needed to move up a level, would you consider just the Diarel? Because the Diarel is also a thiazide. It's not hydrochloric thiazide, but it works fast. Sadly, it does work about in that same hour time frame typically, instead of over the course of the 4 to 6 hours, like the other one that we had preferred, to not push our kidneys too hard. And in that meeting with CPS, they said no. And so I said, well, then let me think about it, because I knew that Bumex was an alternative but equivalent of Lasix. And so I wanted to talk with Billy about it. And At the same time, they had told us that, like, you know, because originally we said we wanted to record the conversation because there's been a lot of misinformation that's happening. And they said no, CPS said no. Yeah, I know. But at least I had the patient advocates on the phone. So later, the resident comes up to us and says that the doctors are willing to do the Diarel. So the other thiazide that is still fast acting. And I said, well, I want you to confirm that with the doctor. Like that is absolutely confirmed. So she left and she came back and she said, yes, they said that they're willing to do the Diarel. And I said, so then we'll be in compliance if we do the anti-seizure medication, the PICC line, and the Diarel. And they said, she said, yes.
They get everything they want, basically.
Yes, except at least it's the thiazide, right?
Yeah.
So at this point, because this is all under coercion at this point.
Of course it is.
So that night,
I can't imagine what you're going through right now. They're risking you losing custody of your child.
Right.
Because of what has gone on with their protocols of care.
Right. And my daughter's starting to get a fever. So they're saying she has an infection.
Of course she has an infection. They've only put everything in her body that we talked about earlier with the lines in the neck. Now she has the catheter in her. Yeah. I mean, she's been getting all the pokes. IVs.
She's got the tubes, the feet. Now she has a feeding tube.
And she has the lung, the thing, the fluid in her lungs, and the intubation's not helping that at all. Of course she has an infection.
Right. So the people to install the PICC line come and they say, it is hospital policy that we do not put a PICC line in someone who has an active infection. So you will be assuming all risk, and do you consent? Now, we are under the coercion of the CPS order to put the PICC line in. So while we may not have felt comfortable giving our daughter something that the hospital policy doesn't even allow, which is a PICC line with an infection, because they told us you can get sepsis, like all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
We feel like we have to. So we move forward with the PICC line and we start her on the Diarel, even though she has an infection. So this goes on through the night. She has the PICC line. She has the Diarel. She's got the anti-seizure medication. And the next morning, CPS calls me and says, so your court hearing is at 1:30 today because we've heard you're out of compliance. And I'm upset because I say, we complied to everything. So why would we have a hearing? And they said, well, that's not what we were informed of this morning. And so I'm saying, I want to speak with the doctors. Where are the doctors? Because we are in full compliance. And CPS says, well, we'll try calling them again. We'll try contacting them again, and we'll let you know. In the meantime, text us your email, and we will let you know the Zoom link to your hearing. So I still haven't been served. I don't have any documents about the hearing and what's taking place. They let me know at 11:30 that we were still out of compliance. So I went in the hallway, and at this point I'm like, where is the doctor? Like, why are the doctors not speaking with us when we have complied with everything? So they came to do rounds, and they said they wanted to move from Diarel to Lasix or Bumex. And I chose to do Bumex, but obviously the elephant in the room is not being spoken about. And so I'm saying, like, I need confirmation that somebody has contacted CPS to let them know that we have remained in compliance. So this is all under.
Did you get a lawyer at this time?
I'm frantically looking for one, right? Because they let me know at 8:30, and then I have a 1:30 hearing. So again, we're still not getting any paperwork about the hearing or, you know, our status, no due process. And so we are contacting lawyers frantically, and they did finally text us that they were informed that we were in compliance with all of the medical professionals' recommendations. And I said, okay, so then the hearing is off. And they said, no, you're still going to have a court hearing at 1:30. So we have a couple of lawyers who are willing to sort of sit in on the Zoom call, but are not willing to necessarily take the case because you know, this is all so quick. They don't even have all of the information yet. And for the hearing, we wind up getting on the Zoom call, and we have some of our patient advocates on there. And we're told that a lawyer has been, you know, assigned to us. Because you have to have a certain type of course that you've taken in order to represent a dependent's case, which is like almost impossible to find that lawyer, that type of lawyer online. Like, how do you find those people? And so they did like a breakout session where I believe they were like looking up each of the people we had on the Zoom call with us as our patient advocates and our the people who did show up to kind of support us in terms of the legal stuff, even if they weren't going to be our lawyers. And we did a breakout session with the lawyer herself, and I did find her to be very kind. And she said, you know, things like, I'm sorry you're going through this. I'm sure you know so much more than you want to about your daughter's medical condition. And I'm, you know, sure that you feel like you're trying to advocate for her needs. And so she hadn't even received all of the paperwork. So there was a letter from the doctor that CPS was citing that she was not even given. So she wanted to argue for a continuance because there was no due process at this point. I've received nothing but an email with a Zoom link. And you know, she doesn't even have everything that she needs. So when the hearing proceeds, they're, you know, trying to remove my daughter from our care and assign her a social worker. The judge is, you know, has denied the continuance because in this type of case, they, I guess, don't have to provide a certain amount of time for the hearing. So being served is somehow different, but also acknowledges due process has not occurred. So when they're reading me things that are concerned, which I wasn't notified by CPS about, they're saying things like, when she had a soiled diaper, I wouldn't allow them to use wipes, which is actually like when they would change her diapers, the wipes are really wet and they're cold, and she would cry. She would wake up if she was at all sedated, which has been a hard process. And so I had said, like, they're not soiled diapers, they're wet diapers. And so, like, why don't we just do every other one where we use wipes on her? So they're clearly like manipulating information that they have, and, you know, saying that we're unfit parents. And I actually think that a lot of this stems from the fact that I said I was going to be filing grievances. I talked about things like the Joint Commission and and the ramifications of any malpractice that was taking place for my daughter. And so I think that there was a retribution aspect to all of this, because so many small things were taking out of context to make us look like we weren't, you know, caring and loving parents. And so, you know, we had a few people that kind of testified on our behalf briefly about, you know, the times where my daughter was throwing up blood, or, you know, from the medications that were being given to her, to, you know, people not listening, which resulted in like a seizure, to medications given without our consent. And I think it really came down to the fact that I was not given due process because I wasn't even given enough time to address like all of the little things that they were speaking about, like denying her seizure medication, which obviously it wasn't communicated to them that I had questions about the one that they were recommending, because the neurologist even said, like, you know, it is something that you should consider, that there's a risk of it impacting her kidney function. And so I really didn't even get to go line by line to discuss all of the things that they were trying to bring against me as a parent, and to explain like why all of those things were being actually explored as with her medical team. Like, it was more exploring and wanting a dialogue. So that was concerning. But technically, because we were in compliance with everything they requested, they could not court order anything.
Praise God.
Yeah, but they said that they were going to issue something where they could, the hospital could override my consent if it was a life-threatening emergency.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, that's very vague.
It is very vague.
And the piece of like due process still remains, right? Like, right. So I couldn't address their actual concerns that would result in that type of, you know, management of my daughter was still not being, you know, properly handled. So, yeah. So at this point, you know, we're still under kind of the threat of coercion, like about what we do and don't consent to, but our daughter remains in our care. So,
praise God. I hope you will continue with an attorney. And, you know, one thing that we all have a right to, and they probably will fight you on this, but a right to be tried by a jury of our peers.
Right.
And I'm trying to submit a bill in the Arizona State Legislature that if a parent is going to have their kids removed, that be done, that trial be done in front of a jury of their peers. It is our constitutional right. And a lot of people don't think about that. It's your constitutional right to be tried by a jury of your peers. And I think that's one of the ultimate trials there could ever be. It destroys you as a family if your kid's taken from you. So see if your attorney can work with that if it comes up again, that you be tried with a jury of your peers, because it's your constitutional right to do so. Again, due process, right? We have that due process. It's guaranteed in the Constitution.
Right. And it's interesting too, because after all this, like, her doctor remained the same. So there's obviously a conflict of interest. So that's been another thing that I've been exploring, is like, why, you know, why is the hospital saying that I have to have the same doctor who tried to remove her from my care as a parent by making me look unfit and directly lying? Because what I did express to the court was that we could prove by her medical records that when they were saying the next morning we weren't in compliance, but that was untrue, that we had done everything.
And I have found from other parents that I interviewed, in the medical records, they have found hospital malpractice when they have tried to remove the kids from the home. And so, where some were successful, and then those parents eventually were able to get their kids back by the grace of God, because they showed in the medical records the malpractice that happened, they were able to get their kids back. So praise God, you have a lot of things documented,
right?
Because it's important. And don't stop pursuing this attorney. What's your next step? Because is she still intubated?
No. So that has been a blessing that we're still on kind of pins and needles about, is that kind of in the midst of all of this, she was not responding to sedatives anymore. Like, her body had just developed such a tolerance. It already had such a high tolerance. So they tried to move her from propofol to like a drip of fentanyl, and she started like hallucinating, but was not sedated. So she was pointing and moving her body a lot. And so then they tried to switch her to morphine, and she was getting like extremely itchy where she was thrashing. And so her numbers, again, I keep consulting this, patient advocate who's an RT, a pediatric RT, and he's saying like her numbers remain good. Like, why are they claiming they need to keep her on a ventilator? And again, it was those parameters that someone who's on all these medications is going to have a hard time meeting when they're getting, you know, constant PRNs of Ativan to assist because the fentanyl's not working. You know, it's just this vicious cycle. The night before last, they were considering extubating her for that reason, that she's not responding to sedatives. If you can't sedate her, she's at risk of pulling out the tubes, right? But they insist on waiting, and so they spend that entire night doing a combination of Atarax to help the itching and then boluses of morphine. And after, you know, 12 hours of that, she just kind of collapses. Like, she's not in a good place. And my concern was, right, like, they're saying, like, let's wait on extubation till the morning, and they're loading her with sedatives, which means she's probably going to have a poor response to being extubated. And then they can just claim, well, we tried. Well, we tried, and she wasn't successful, so I had to go right back in. And so yesterday when they got ready to extubate her, they told us like it might have to go right back in. And I was like, this has been a setup for failure, right? Like, why wouldn't they take it out when she was agitated enough to probably breathe on her own versus absolutely, you know, just hit with so much morphine. And so yesterday they did attempt extubation, and they were able to initially put her on a high flow, and then when she would cough, they did say that they think it was painful for her, and so she would bear down instead of trying to get it up, and so they moved her from to a CPAP, and then last night they did have to move her to a BiPAP, which it's funny because at the beginning of all this, when they weren't taking her off the ventilator after the MRI, the doctor had said, well, the only alternative would be BiPAP, and kids hate that, and you have to sedate them anyway, so this is gentler. And I remember being like, a ventilator is not gentler than a mask mm-hmm. on your face, especially if she has to be sedated. Mm-hmm. If she's going to be sedated either way, why wouldn't we just put a mask on her face? So she has responded well through the night to the BiPAP. Of course, they gave us like a timeline, well, you know, 24 hours and then, or 12 hours, and then, you know, we have to make it through that window, and we can intubate at any time, and then now they're kind of extending that. So we're in this place right now where mm-mm. we just want to get her to a place where she is not, and we have felt held hostage for a long time. Mm-hmm. But when you're on a ventilator, you genuinely are. And so yes. even being able to transfer her care becomes very difficult. And so at this point, if we can remain extubated, that is a there is a hope that at least we can get her maybe, you know, a different team of doctors or something. But
are you working with an attorney to get her out of that hospital?
We don't actually have an attorney who meets their criteria for the court case that we were, you know, given. So I guess
it's all a money making scheme.
It is.
It's all a money making scheme. The judges are in on it. The social workers are on it. They have some pediatric forensic doctors in on it. Mm-hmm. The attorneys are in on it. Caseworkers are in on it. There's so many people getting paid, and it's a form of child trafficking. They're getting paid to remove a child from a home that doesn't need to be removed. You've tried everything. You were concerned to go take her to the hospital. You did nothing to neglect her, and everything they have done that did not have anything to do with E. coli, the original thing you brought her in for, they have slowly tried to destroy her health. Praise God she's four, because that might be her saving grace right now, being young.
I do fear, because at one point on that night when they were pumping her with, you know, morphine, and then she's also got delirium going on, like they're trying a few different medications, and one of them was an antipsychotic, and I'm a therapist, so I know, like, the side effects of antipsychotics, like the chewing and the dry mouth and the urinary problems, and all of these are to treat the delirium, because we're pushing all these sedatives because she's not responding to the sedatives anymore because she's on a ventilator, and she has ventilator associated pneumonia is what they claim, even though I do believe it was aspirated pneumonia to begin
probably.
With. And so it's just been this horrible, vicious cycle, and the fact that a lawyer has to have a dependence court course completed in order to represent you, like it's all very complicated, and so we are looking for, you know, continued legal support, although it does sound like supposedly their what they issued regarding her health being, you know, kind of overriding my consent to emergency measures would expire within 2 weeks. But they did set a hearing if for some reason we act against that. So that would be on, I believe, the 24th. So we are looking for continued support if you know, anyone listening knows of something available, because it's just, they make it very complicated to have representation.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. How can my audience help you? What are some things that we could do for you?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is continuing to keep the pressure up I know that a lot of people have posted to, you know, leave messages with the hospital. Remnant Nursing has been posting numbers that, you know, we don't want to overwhelm the charge nurse. I'm not looking for people to dox anyone, but letting them know that the world is watching, that, you know, we are not in here in a vacuum, and that we, you know, have been coerced, that, but that people are aware of what's taking place. Like, that's been kind of the biggest support. And then prayer, and then really any resources. You know, I know that people have talked about issuing a stay with CPS, because I don't want that to continue to be mm-hmm. an issue, is to, you know, their continued involvement, especially because with the things that they documented in the hearing, I felt like there was a lot of manipulation or lying.
For sure.
About trying to make us look unfit, like the thing with the wiping the soiled diapers.
Yes.
Yeah.
So is it okay to give out the number to the hospital for people to call if they so wish to call?
Yes. Let me look up the most recent
I have
one
it.
That... Okay,
well,
great. Okay.
It's 650-736-4089. 650-736-4089. One more time. 650-736-4089. This is Lucille Packard Children's Hospital. And you're just calling. We're not going to be belligerent. We don't want to make their lives more difficult. We just want it to be known. Public pressure, right? We just want it to be known that we know what's going on with this child. And we do not want their parental rights severed, because they ultimately care the most for their kid. This is right. their child. They care the most for their child.
Right.
No doctor, no nurse could care more than these parents care for their child.
Right.
So
and her name is Autumn Shaw.
Autumn Shaw. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad we brought that up again, Autumn Shaw, because I only talked about it at the beginning of the episode. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the program today and sharing your story with Autumn. I'm glad that little girl is so resilient. We're going to be praying for her. I've already started praying for her. We're just going to lift your family up in prayer that you find the attorneys you need. Your daughter's health will continue to rise so you can leave that hospital and
yes,
hopefully never
exactly.
return again.
Yeah, we want to just bring her home to heal, because really the only reason this all started was I thought that she had something that, you know, resolved with an enema.
Right.
Not this crazy. From the get-go when we got here, my husband and I looked at each other and said, like, this feels like a pipeline. This feels like a pipeline.
And you're right. It is.
Okay.
You're right.
Yeah, just all of the support and getting Autumn's story out has been amazing, because, yeah, I think that without that, I think we'd be in a very different place right now. So I'm really, really grateful. Really grateful.
Well, you have a good one and keep us updated on Autumn.
Okay, I will. Thank you so much.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break.
Hey, so when you are a guest at the Amber Mae's house, you get luxury. And how you get luxury is I have this sleeping couch, this sleeper sofa, and you're telling me that's not luxury. It is when you put a MyPillow mattress topper on it. All my guests that have come over and stayed at my house have really enjoyed this sleeper sofa, which says a lot, because they're getting to sleep on the MyPillow pillows. And you get the MyPillow mattress topper. And then it doesn't stop there with the luxury, because when you shower at the Anna Mae Show's house, you get to have a MyPillow towel. I don't have the kids using it. I just let the adults have the luxury. So the adults get to use the MyPillow and they're phenomenal. And right now there's a massive sale going on with the MyPillow towel. So you should really put luxury into your home and live it every day like Amber Mae does every day. So I have a MyPillow mattress topper on my bed. I use the MyPillow sheets, the MyPillow towels, MyPillow slippers. I live luxury and I don't have to pay the luxury price because MyPillow has promo code. So use my name, Amber, and save up to 66% off, and you can live luxurious as well. Hey friends, I want to tell you what I recently did. I broke away from the big three. I was tired of the woke mogul, and I wanted to go to a Christian conservative company that I could trust, that support the organizations that I value, and that is Patriot Mobile.
So when you go to patriotmobile.com/amber, you are going to get free activation. It is super easy to get started to switch from the big three to Patriot Mobile. They'll walk you step by step. It is not difficult at all. And I've had tremendous service since I made the switch. So I recommend if you want to vote with your wallet and support a company that supports your values, go to patriotmobile.com/amber and save on a free activation. So that's patriotmobile.com/amber. Now the links are in the description below or on my website at theambermayshow.com/promo. So check that out. So it's time to vote with our wallet, ditch the woke mobile, and go to a Christian conservative mobile. And that is patriotmobile.com/amber. Thank you for joining us today on The Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at The Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Socially Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on The Amber May Show.